Okay, can you say your name?
Jenna Woodward. Jenna Woodward.
Okay. And what... So you've worked at national parks?
Yeah. Well, I worked in wilderness therapy for about 4 or 5 years and teaching environmental science. So I've taken a lot of groups of pretty angry kids, like into Yellowstone and into Yosemite, and I lived in Yosemite for about 3 months, working for a certain program, and just worked in the Tetons and Yellowstone a couple summers ago. And now that I'm teaching rock climbing at PSU now, so I spend a lot of time in Hood and at Smith Rocks. Have you been down there?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, you should, while you're out here.
At Smith Rocks?
Yeah, it's down near Sisters, Eugene area, so I just spent the weekend down there.
What is wilderness therapy? Like, what is the practice?
Basically, the idea is that you're taking these troubled kids out of their environment where they already have unsuccessful ways of coping with a lot of their issues, and you put them in kind of a fresh one where they're challenged and they have to work with other people. And,
so it's like Outward Bound, kind of?
Yeah, it's like Outward, but Outward Bound is kind of for like your average kid, and these are tend to be hyper-medicated and have several different diagnoses and all this stuff. It's basically like the kids that Outward Bound and those kind of programs won't take.
And what happens to them when they're exposed to these environments?
I've watched... There's usually a lot of fear at first. And I've watched kids really... I've sometimes wonder if when they go home they just go back to everything else. But I've definitely watched kids become more open to changing themselves. And making real concerted efforts to kind of try out new behaviors instead of the ones that aren't really working for them. It's also just, it's really therapeutic. Like, they get time to sit and stare at nothing, or sit and stare at something awesome, you know, or like go without electric lighting for a really long time. Like, just really, I don't know.
How do you,
put
like,
their heads back on straight?
How do you think that makes them develop, like, gives them other options in terms of behavior by being in the wilderness?
I think it gives them time to see. If it's done right, I feel like the best thing it does is give them space to see how the choices they make impact them. It gives you these really kind of concrete ways of dealing with that. Like, you chose to not go get water, so you don't have water, and just kind of very basic stuff like that. But then there's also something about being, and this is what I've always enjoyed even when I was younger, I feel like you can look back at your life. I feel like you're given this kind of vantage point that you wouldn't have at home. You can kind of look at that from the outside and make kind of different judgments about the people that you're hanging out with or how your parents behave and all that stuff.
What do you think it is about, like, that exposure that does that? Is it like being not around any kind of electrical devices? Is it being around...
I think that definitely helps. I think it's peace. I think it gives kids peace. In some ways. And it also gives them, although some of them don't notice it as readily, but maybe gives them a sense of being smaller that I think is helpful. You know, like, their problems become smaller, and their gives them something, gives them a chance to think about something that isn't them, you know, for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's something private about it, I feel like. Gives them a chance to be just with themselves.
It's interesting, because it's like, I mean, so there's an opportunity to be private, but yet there's such a monumental sense of scale.
Yes.
That they feel small, and that combination of immense scale but also private space is like
great.
And also, I mean, where else does one find that outside of wilderness?
I honestly don't really know. I mean, I know that, I know for me, I've had periods where I'm living in cities and periods where I'm not, and it kind of seems to go in a pattern where I just find myself, like when I was living in New York, I was just like, I have to go, and like got a job in California and got out. So for me, it's always been a chance to quiet down a lot of distractions, I guess.
And, like, listen to yourself? Is
Yeah. Without having, like, the judgments. Because we all, like, imagine how other people are viewing us and judging us and blah, blah, blah. And I feel like you get a break from that when you're away from those people. You can maybe just see yourself in just through your own lens instead of, like, you know, my mom thinks I do this wrong and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So, like, sort of nature doesn't have a bias, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Or it has a really simple one. I really like the natural. It's so much easier than teaching in a classroom. Where you have, if a kid is out of line or something, you have to create a consequence. But out in the wilderness, like, you don't really have to do anything. Like,
so what's an example of that? Like, can you give an example of a time when a...
A lot of these trips are usually backpacking, or actually when I was in Yellowstone, they were horsepacking trips. But if you get to camp and you decide to screw around for a couple hours, even though there's a rainstorm, you know, like you don't get to be dry, you know, it's very like, and there's only so much, I guess, I can do to help them out. You know, I can let them know, be like, you know, I said that this is going to happen, but they get that actual real experience of like, oh, I have to do things that I might not want to do in order to, you know, make myself more comfortable later. So
it's like the consequences kind of help them learn how to be accountable?
Yeah. And just the other thing, I mean, there's the wilderness aspect, but the group aspect of being in a group of people that are all holding you accountable in some way. You are accountable to them, even if you don't like them, you know? So.
Let me get my cable. So I'm curious, like, how... I mean, a lot of questions that I have, and I don't know how much... sort of contact you've had with tourists in contrast to youth who are sort of being given a different relationship with the wilderness and the organized park structure. But like, I'm curious about your experience of them and how that might be in contrast or complement to the youth who you're working with and how those experiences differ, do you think?
That just made me think of, well, one thing with tourists, both Yosemite and Yellowstone, there was just this very clear line being drawn between where the public, where like your average Joe went, you know, and that was always more crowded and things were kind of, it's like, you're going to walk down this path and then look at this. Going to turn around and walk down another path and look at this, and then maybe you can get some ice cream over here, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, And I always hated being in in Yosemite, in the valley area. I hate, that's not why I'm coming out there, to be in a big, huge, crowded spot. But I just thought of how it always strikes me as, I always have to take the kids there, because there always has to be some aspect of the trip where we, in Yellowstone, you have to go. It's just to drive me crazy. But we have to take the kids to see Old Faithful. You have to sit there. And for me, it was I'd already done that, 9 times or 10 times, and the kids aren't really, I don't feel like the kids really get all that much out of it, It's just, this thing, they have to go home with a certain set of pictures for their parents to see, kind of thing, proof that they were there. But it always struck me that, the kids that were walking around with me held themselves a lot differently than the kids that were walking around with their parents.
Can you talk? Just raise your voice a little bit. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you can see, kids with their kid, the typical tourist American family, mother, father, daughter, son, the kids always look like they're being dragged around. They always look like they're not, that, not always, but they tend to look like it's some sort of chore. And there's always a, they also, I don't want to say always, but you tend to get this vibe, they seem to come off more annoying, the kids
annoyed
act,
or annoying?
Annoying. The kids act more, they're picking on each other and, yelling at their parents, and their parents are yelling at them, and so rarely do you see, the, happy family at the national park, It seems like it's, everyone's going through motions they think they have to go through when they get in there. And I feel like the kids, I'm always kind of struck by how much more in control and mature the kids I'm with seem, because they aren't. I'm kind of making them do stuff and dragging them around, but they have, I guess, just a little more autonomy in that situation. So it seems like they always just seem a little, they seem a little bit quieter than the other kids. And more acting more like they're taking things in and actually looking at things instead of dealing with whatever problems are in their family unit and that kind of thing.
Would you consider them tourists? The wilderness therapy youth, or would you?
In certain contexts, I guess they would be. There's part of me that feels like the people that actually go out, that leave that kind of manicured area that's designed, I feel like they have more ownership. There's part of me that gives them more ownership to the park, because they actually go out to where there aren't a lot of, where it's not made for visiting, I guess.
How would you, how would you define ownership of wilderness space?
It's all public. I have a bit of, the Teddy Roosevelt kind of, it's all ours, I guess. But I guess with anything else, there's a way of using that space without changing it. You're always going to change it to some extent, but there's a way to walk quieter, I guess, in those environments. And I feel like the way a lot of the parks are set up, they've made it so easy for people to come in, and you can drive you can drive up to whatever you want to see and then walk a short distance, and they've made it easier to come into. But that's a little bit, I would rather that there weren't roads going through everything, and and then if you wanted to see that stuff, you would go see it, you would find a way to get out there on your own. But then there's this whole things being accessible to everyone, and like the ramp, like I thought that was funny. Like the wheelchair accessible ramp. It's just like it's everyone should be in these areas. I wish there was just some way of slowing it down a little bit, I guess. Just like trashing it a little bit less. I just feel like it gets a little trashed when you add like massive parking lots and concessions.
I think it's like interesting what you say about, like, you know, when I just asked you about ownership and you spoke about sort of having a lighter footprint and like that in a way kind of like your association of ownership of this public land has to do almost with like trafficking it less in a way, owning, you know, like sort of being in a way less possessive of it.
What I always kind of say to the kids at different moments, like I'll just be like, can you imagine walking in on this without having seen posters of it your whole life, or like pictures of it your whole life, walking in on this and just seeing, like, especially in Yellowstone, like some of that stuff is just crazy. And if you imagine like just seeing that for the first time without a ramp leading up to it telling you where to look and explaining what extremophiles are, and like if you were just allowed to just go in and take it in just as it is. And
so what do you think the photograph does for national parks, or to national parks, or to the experience? Like, how does it change, like, when you ask them that, what it...
Yeah. I mean, usually half the time they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then other times they're like, yeah, that would be so great, blah, blah, blah. You know. I think I always, I used to be a big picture taker when I was younger. And with these kids, like, they get really upset. They're like, oh, I gotta get 8 pictures of this thing, you know. And one thing that I always try to say is, like, it's not gonna look the same. You know, it's not gonna... And that might be why I take less pictures now, but... And that's the kind of common complaint I hear from kids. They're like, it was so big, and it felt so huge, and now it just looks like this, you know? I feel like in that sense, like, it gives you a sense that you can take that... Maybe a false sense that you can take that, whatever feelings it's causing in you, that you can take it with you. And just maybe, just kind of reinforces this kind of, like, permanence, this idea of permanence, of just, like, it looked like this today, it will always look like, you know, that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting how we displace physical and emotional experience for the image, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's actually become one of my little pet peeves, I guess. Now working with, I lead trips for PSU, too, and a lot of times it's, foreign exchange students, because they kind of think of it as like a tour guide kind of thing. They're like, yes, I'm going to get out of the city, and they're always, like, there's always, like, whatever we do, there's got to be, like, a photo time, you know, and, like, everybody's got to, and it's kind of started to bug me a little bit, actually. I haven't really thought about this before, but they, like, I feel like instead of, like, we see something beautiful or great, and instead of being like, let's sit here and I'll just look at this and take this in, it's like, like, you know, and yeah, and you're having more the experience of like, I'm gonna take this and save it for later and look at it later, you know, and it's like, you could just
why do you think that happens? Like that we move out of our body in those moments. I mean, I don't have an answer, so I'm curious.
I've wondered about that. Uh, I feel like I used to, when I was younger, I could much more easily sit and just be in awe at stuff, and I can't really do that anymore. Like, after, like, 30 seconds, I'm like, what's next, you know, like, so I think I'm always trying to find, whenever I'm in, like, an awful situation, or, I don't know, a beautiful situation, I'm trying to be like, okay, just take it in, and just be here, and, which I never had to do when I was 9, you know, and I had to remind myself to be somewhere, I think it's like this, it's like an impulse, it's like, okay, that's pretty, what do I do with pretty things, you know, or it's like, what should I do, like, oh, that's beautiful, what should I do with this, I'll take a picture of it, you know, and I think that's just, I think we have a hard time just being like, that's there, and it's there.
Cool. And why do you think you could do that when you were 9?
I was better at just being with myself, I think. And I didn't have anything else to do.
Yeah.
there wasn't anything else to do, but... And I didn't think of it as like, man, I better kill 2 hours looking at this sunset. It was just kind of like, I'm just going to sit here because I don't, yeah. Just less time constraint, less expectations. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because this project sort of, among other inspirations, but the primary inspiration is of a cross-country trip I took when I was 9.
Yeah.
So... I was curious that you brought up that age and that the experiential was meaningful for you in a specific way at that moment.
Yeah. I keep getting made fun of. I have this Twilight tattoo that people keep asking me if I like.
You mean the book?
Yeah, I get that a lot. And it's not, it's from like, it was like 8 or 9 years old, but I used to be able to just sit Twilight and just, and I remember like I would look forward to it during the day when I was really young. I could just sit in my backyard and just think it was the best time ever, I guess. It was almost like, and I had no idea I was doing that when I was younger, but now I would say it was like a meditative kind of thing. But when I was really young, it was really easy to do that.
You mean to sit still?
To sit still.
Take in.
Yeah. Like, the smells and the changing colors and all that stuff. But, I just can't really do that anymore. I still try, but it's like 30 seconds.
I guess one of the things that's been really interesting to me is to think about the relationship between tourists and audiences,
mm-hmm.
or audience, and, mm-hmm. like, how this is really... This installation sort of is in the framework of a performance, primarily a performance festival. Mm-hmm. And so many of the visitors are really less so viewers and more so audiences.
Yeah.
And how, I guess, one of the things that I was just really interested in hearing your thoughts on is do those two kinds of being or receiving have a relationship, in your opinion, or
the tourist and audience kind of thing? Well, there is that sense of I'm going to come to this place and I'm going to get something. Someone's going to stimulate me, I guess. And that's definitely in the, what you do kind of as a tourist, you're not so much a participant. You think you're participating, but you're not really, you know. And I had this great picture, actually, of at Yellowstone now, because I know it used to be just like one bench. Now there is like, it's like stadium seating around Old Faithful. This great picture of, and it's like, you know, peak hours in the summertime, you're probably sitting out there with like 150 people, like 200 people, and everybody gets real, and it teases you a little. There's the little spurts that come out before. I spent a lot of time staring at this. And the audience always gets, it just gets really hut when it starts to do the teasy thing. The audience gets really hushed. And I had this great picture of, like, look like 100 people, but everybody just stares straight forward. And it's just amazing that this funny little gas, you know, funeral thing is just holding people entranced. I mean, that's cool. But... the tourist is definitely more audience than participant.
What do you think, like, slips us into a tourist space? Because we're all capable of experiencing wilderness in a more active way, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it's because we're just, like, told to move in this direction and that direction and, like, something happens? Or do you think it's...
I mean, it makes sense. Like, I understand why the Park Service would want to set things up like this. Like, they are, you know, protecting all the natural flora and fauna and all that stuff, and they're kind of setting up trails for people to go on. It's really funny, at Smith Rock, they actually I was thinking about this weekend, I was down there this weekend, and they're redoing a lot of the trails, and there are direct routes that could take you to different places that you would like to be, but they're trying to, like, cancel out the direct routes and, like, put you on this, like, winding, like, where you meander through all the, you know. And for me, like, I love that place, but I also feel like I'm working when I'm there, and I'm, like, I'm taking these people, we need to get here, and then we'll go here. And sometimes I was just kind of noticing that a lot of the tourists or the people there, just out for, like, their weekend walk, they're like, oh, I'm just going to meander down this wandering path, you know, and they're probably better off than I am, that they're just wandering around, but...
You mean whereas, like, others who are going more for the straight...
Yeah, just trying to get where you need to be by 12:30 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the trail maintenance and all that stuff. Paths, but it definitely, Yosemite especially, they're like, I feel like you show up and they're like, here's a booklet, this is all the stuff you probably want to see, this is all the stuff you should see, here's some things that you might want to look at if you've got extra time, but if you're only here for 3 days, then you better look at these things, you know, and it's like, and then the road is set up in a loop, and you go in that, and the same thing with Yellowstone's loop. And I feel like they hand the experience to people. And maybe that's what people want. Maybe they're just giving people what they want.
What do you think it does to the land? Like, I noticed when I was at Mount St. Helens that, like, I wonder what it is to be that mountain and be looked at that much and be taken. Like...
Yeah. Yeah. It is that idea that it's there for us. There's that. I spent a lot of time studying, not that much time. I did some reading on environmental ethics a couple of years ago, and this, the concept that, I mean, we have to save all of these places, we have to prove to the American people and the American government, or different politicians have had to prove over time, that we'll get more out of it how it is, supposedly, than, like, if we just let it go to be used for resources or development or something. But that puts it in our heads that it has to be worth something to us in a very tangible way. You know, like, it's worth... It's bringing revenue in. Like, the tourists are necessary, they're bringing revenue for the state, but yeah, this idea that it must be there for us somehow it must be existing because we need it, and that is, like, and that's true between people, like, anytime that you decide someone is existing for you, you know? You've done them a huge disservice. So I would say that kind of, it does it all a big disservice. Just this concept that it must be valuable to us. We have to get something out of it for it to exist. For it to be allowed to exist, we have to somehow, yeah.
Yeah, so it's almost like the land is performing. Like, yeah. In a way, I mean, just thinking about the Taurus, yeah. This audience, it's yeah. Almost like the land becomes an endless performer that never has...
Yeah.
That is sort of never not giving or never not yeah. being taken from.
Yeah, and there's a very set expectation for how it's going to look all the time. And I've heard brattier kids at times, like, complain, like there's a waterfall in Yosemite that dries up. It's an amazing waterfall, but it dries up towards the end of the summer every year. And I've had kids be like, it's not even there anymore. Like, this just kind of, like, you know, and it's like, that's its natural progression. It stops running after a while, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I mean...
But I thought I was going to see this big, tall waterfall, you know, and it's like, it's... Well, it's not there.
Yeah, what you were saying before about, like, you know, we have to prove to the government that it's worth not changing these spaces. And I just was thinking, but...
We change them.
Yeah, I mean, like, preventing or stopping forest fires is a way of us changing
yeah.
that land.
Yeah, well, and that's been a big problem. We really screwed up a lot of areas by doing that for a really long time. And now there's a lot of parks now that set fires. But even that, it's like, so you're deciding that there should be a fire right now? Like, it's, yeah. In order to make it safe for us to be in a huge, I really like the bear thing, because the politics of bears, especially in Yellowstone, like, that's one of the better ways of, like, bears, like, people pull over and stop because they get to see the bear, that kind of, like, all that stuff, where the bears are somehow performing. But then when the bears misbehave, they are, like, shot or trapped and taken somewhere else, or, you know, it's kind of like you are with it. It's like they are now characters in this Disney, you know, this kind of, like, the bears must behave this way, and if they don't, now, a lot of times their negative behavior is because of stupid stuff tourists have been doing, but, like, mm-hmm. It's just, like, we set up a set of rules for how everyone will act in this environment, you know, including the animals, and then we're shocked when they don't.
So maybe what you're saying is that there's a lot of expectation projected onto...
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. People come in with preconceived notions of what they're going to see or what they're going to do there.
And, like, what behavior is...
Yeah.
Or, like, what expectation about what's acceptable wildness and what's...
Yeah. That just got me about these kids and... The wilderness therapy kids, they tend to be a little bit wilder, and that's why I always hated having to go into the, like, because at some point during the trip, we had to go into the more populated areas, and that would generally make them a little bit, like, if anybody had serious behavior problems, they usually, like, kind of upped it a little bit in that setting, and I would get really anxious about my kids impacting the people there, you know, like, just like, oh, you know, like, everybody's supposed to walk along like this and talk at this level and blah, 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 and my kid doesn't do that very well, you know, like, doesn't, so, yeah, so even the people in there have a set of rules that they should be, just like, I mean, it's in any public space, I guess.
So, and you're not working for a national park now?
No.
What's your favorite national park?
The North Cascades, I would say.
Why?
They have always, they seem the wildest. They're like the least visited, I think. So I feel like whenever I'm there, it doesn't feel like a park, actually. A lot of the times. They like haven't been able to put, I guess a lot of people aren't drawn there or something. They haven't really put a lot of money into bringing people in. That always feels the wildest. And just the rock, the mountains are crazy, amazing, beautiful. So, yeah. It's the North Cascades.
And souvenirs.
Do I have them? Or do I...
Yeah, what's your...
What's my favorite souvenir to take?
Yeah.
I should say pictures, but no. This is actually terrible. I like to take little rocks.
Me too.
Which you're not supposed to do, and I always tell the kids not to do. I will also... I don't really usually take flowers in national parks, but I will take flowers in other parks. If they seem like they're plenty abundant.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever taken from a national park?
Whoa. I had this log that had been, I guess, like termites or something. But it was all like, you know, have you ever seen that when the bugs leave all the like curly trails? That was probably. And it was all gnarled and weird. It was just cool looking.
And where was that from?
That was in the south. That was at Mesa Verde, actually.
Well, I think we should probably wrap it up.
Yeah.
But thanks for...
Yeah.
I guess I'll probably edit this down and then maybe put it on my journal online.
Okay.
And just take, like, a few excerpts.
Cool.
Yeah. Thanks for...
Oh, sure. This looks cool. Are you going to cover the wood or leave it?
I'm going to leave it exposed. Nice. Yeah. So, let me turn this off.